accession number 23827, Real 7.
John Street, Real 7. So, you came back to the UK.
Is it, I came back to the United Kingdom because I was discharged. I went up to Blackpool and got my civvy clothes and came down. And but it was really rather funny again to me. When I got to start with paperwork up there at Blackpool, the fellow said to me, he said, "You're a regular, aren't you?" And I said, "No, I'm not a regular." He said, "Well, according to me, you're a regular." And I said, "No." I said, "What I'd done, I extended past my release date." I said, "But I'm not a regular. I've never kind of decided to be a regular." I said, he said, "Well, there's a possibility." He said, "You'd have to do reserve training." Oh, I said, "I wouldn't mind that." But it didn't come off. But it was held in the back of my mind, and I started work, I think, in September 47, finished my apprenticeship, and I didn't get on as a civilian at all.
What did you miss about the services?
Well, I think to a certain extent, I missed the comradeship. I found that in the service, that people will help you along. If something goes wrong, you've got friends, but in there, you didn't have friends in the civvy life. I didn't fancy being a machinist all my life, and yet every time I tried to get promotion, I was turned down, and usually I worked out eventually that if you were a good machinist, you didn't get promoted, because you were more valuable on producing stuff than standing over other people that were producing stuff. And so I looked around the trade to see what in the trade I could get, because obviously that was my trade, my civvy trade. There was no work for navigators. There were no navigators now outside the Air Force. They used pilots, navigator-trained pilots. Of course, they were flying routes now. They weren't flying over unknown territory.
Yeah.
And I thought there might be an opening as a trade unionist, a paid trade unionist. I could see myself retiring at the age of 60 from the, and giving me knighthood and that sort of thing. You know. But I didn't like that. I did a course in Oxford in economics to get on the ladder. But I found that... I found trade unions very two-faced, very uneducated, some of them, or not educated. They should have been better educated in the responsibility of their job. I mean, it's no good striking. Every time you strike, the man himself loses money. And if you're after a 5-bob rise... And he's on, well, in those days, £5 a week. That's, he's out for a week. It's going to take him 20 weeks to get that money back, isn't it? And in fact, it's worse than that if you really go into it, because in those days, you'd gone to a pawnbroker when you didn't have any money and you paid twice as much to get your money out, or you got tied up with some money lender, you know.
So,
and I found that I did run a strike, and my committee on the firm didn't want to end it. It was stupid to carry on because we couldn't get what we wanted. It was finished. It was a stupid thing we were striking for. And when I asked for advice, I was told, "Well, you're getting paid." Well, I was getting paid. I was leading the strike and I was getting paid. All the other people weren't. And I couldn't see this. The top man should have come down and talked to these people to get them back to work. And then, of course, it was over some football tickets, actually. And I got some of these football tickets and I was fed up. And I was in Stoke-on-Trent anyhow, and my wife was down in Bristol. And I was fed up. And so I gave these to one of the bloke, and... Of course, I was trade union member for both the men and the women, different unions, but I was their leader. I'd been on strike on a Monday morning, didn't I? Well, the women went on strike. They hadn't been included in the draw for the tickets. So I thought, this is it. So I gave a... I'd got up there, actually, because they paid more money and they were going to finance my house. But every time we went out to look at houses, Stoke-on-Trent was a very nice place in those days. It is now, but it wasn't then, because you had all these pot banks around. And you lived, if you lived in the hollow, you lived in the smoke.
Yeah.
You could taste it. Yeah.
So where did the idea of going back to the RAF come from?
Well, no, I came back to Bristol, and I got a job in Bristol. And I got cottoned onto this, being, well, if you were supposed to be a reservist, I'll pursue this. So I did pursue it. And I was allowed to join the RAFVR as a navigator. They gave me the rank of flying officer. And I used to go up to Filton. And I flew. And I only flew from, well, April to July, 2 months. And at the end of July, they said to me, they said, you've got to go away for a month's camp. Oh, a week's camp. So I got a railway warrant, and I travelled in uniform to Swindon. And when I got to Swindon, I found all these young officers from Cranwell climbing on the back of a lorry, and I thought, well, I'm going to climb on the back of a lorry. I'm a flying officer. He's a pilot officer. So I went to see the RTO, who I've actually met since, funnily enough. And I told him, I said, well, I got to go to there. And he said, oh, yes. He said, I'll get you a taxi. So I arrived at Lynham in the taxi. I was met at the door of the officer's mess by a young flying officer, a pilot officer, who I'd been corresponding with. He said, oh, I'm so-and-so, I've been writing to you. Yes, I said. He said, you bring you into a mess kit? I said, yeah. He said, well, that's good, because you better go and get changed, he said, because there's a party on in the mess. So I get into this party, and a squadron leader came up to me, a navigator, and he said, are you with my squadron next week? I said, yes, sir. He said, you done much navigating? I said, well, last year I navigated an Anson between here in Channel Islands and the other islands, the Channel Islands and the ones off this end, City Isles. And I said, I like navigating, and I lecture, I said, to the cadets, air cadets, I said, on navigation, on plotting, and he said, what was the last aircraft you flew in? So I said, well, legally, I said, a Warus. Cord, he said. And what was before that? So I said, I was Air Sea Rescue Warwick. Oh, he said, that's more interesting. He said, do you think you could navigate a York? I said, as long as somebody sat me down and pointed out where all the switches were, I think so. He said, well, get down to the squadron tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And he said, I'll have somebody down there to take her. So this fellow took me out, sat me in the seat, showed me how to switch this on and how to switch the other on. And I knew most of the equipment in it, because we did have some equipment up at the Filton. And he got in and he said, right, it's yours, all yours. And I navigated the aircraft down to Orange in the south of France. And we landed and I showed him the log and he said, oh, very good. What it was there were about four pilots on this aircraft. They were all being catted. And this squadron leader was supposed to navigate the thing. Well, I was a bit lazy or a bit very keen. I mean, he let me do the navigation. He watched me. I mean, he was stood over me. I mean, he didn't... everything I did, he watched, you know. So he said, oh, good job, he said. That's quite interesting, he said. And anyhow, when we landed, he got off the airplane and somebody come up on a motorbike. And he says, hello, George. And the George says, hello. He says, party night round the pool. You're all invited. And this happened there, and I flew from there down to Malta to North Africa back to Malta back to Orange, and I did navigating all the time, and I was getting, you know, quite confident at the end, you know. Oh, he said, that was damn good, he said, you know. I said, well, do you think I'd make a navigator? And yes, he said, why don't you apply to come back in? So I went home, and I said to my wife, she said, what was it like? I said, oh, it was marvellous. absolutely marvellous, I said. And I spoke, met so-and-so and so-and-so, and I met somebody in Malta that we'd known, married to an Italian girl. I said, I met so-and-so in there. They got a lovely house, and they took me round the house. Yeah. And she said, well, she said, I wanted to go back in. She said, you're not happy. I said, you want to go back in. I said, well, it's not, you know, you're going to have long periods alone, and if I get on the roots and things like that. It doesn't matter, she said, because I did a little on my own when you were up in Stoke-on-Trent. She said, I can cope, you know, and I got Jim now, you know, we got a child, we had a child. So I applied to come back in, and it was a quick. The only snag was, is that when I went to London and had my interview, they said, well, we're not taking officers. Would you like to join? I'd take on as an NCO. Well, I had to think about this, I said. But I was staying, they found accommodation for me in a hotel. It's round the back from Air Ministry. I can't remember another name of it, but it was ran by a friend of mine. And I said to him, but, you know, is anybody else around? He said, well, he said, your wife, because he knew Marilena, he said, your wife's friend, the one that was a receptionist for the doctor, she married the PFO. Oh, yeah, I know. She's a physical fitness officer from Naples. See, he got a pub round the back there. So round I trots to see this fella, you see. And I told him about it. He said, what? He said, to be quite honest, go back in as an NCO. He said, because they won't take me as an NCO. They'll take me as an officer. He said, but they'll only give you a 5-year commission. He said, whereas if you go in as an NCO, they're short of NCOs, and you can most likely sign on for 55. So I went back home and told my wife this, and she said, oh, all right then, the money matters. So I joined up as an NCO. And lo and behold, within a year, I managed to sign on till I was 55.
Yeah. So you went back in which year?
I went back in well, I went back in and must have gone back in about mid-50s, I would say.
Right, okay. Right. And where were you first stationed?
I went to Cardingdon.
Yeah.
Which is in Bedfordshire. Mm.
And what was it like rejoining? Were there other people who'd rejoined?
Yes, and it was rather funny because I thought, I'm going to be awkward here because I'm going to... People are going to say, what were you? And I'm going to say, well, I was a flight lieutenant, you know. And, yeah. And they're going to look at me. But when I got there, the first thing I saw was, I've only got campaign medals. I had a number of DFMs, DFCs, not DFMs, DFCs. I had bars.
Really? As NCOs?
All NCOs, yeah. So, the story goes, I don't know how far it's true, but the road where the stores was Carrington Road. Now Carrington was a VC, and the rumour has it that Carrington arrived as an NCO, and they said to the storeman said to him, oh, he says, spelt the same as the road? He said, well, that is my road, he said. But he got commissioned, they tell me. As soon as the RAF realised they got a VC in, because I think it's a bit illegal, isn't it? I'm not sure. Now, how far that's true, I don't know. Yeah. And if anybody wants to check up on it and let me know that it's not true, I'd be quite happy to hear that. Yeah. But my friend, who I eventually became very friendly with, because now we flew two navigators to an aircraft, and eventually I ended up with this sort of... And he was an ex-flight lieutenant, and had flown quite a lot of raids during the war. And then we met another fellow that was... in fact, that's why he had two DFCs. He'd done two tours on mosquitoes. And that was something. I mean, mosquitoes weren't flying fairy toys like I did. So... I found that it was, and there were a lot of people like me, there were people who spent their whole life on coastal commands, so I didn't feel out of place. There were people who'd flown, you know, done Anson's, flying Anson's in Hudson's. In, I didn't find anybody who'd flown Aurora's, pardon me. But,
so what did you go off to do then once you were back in?
Oh, to fly.
Yeah.
A navigator.
Right. And what were your duties at first then?
I passed out from... I did my refresher course down at Thorny Island.
Yeah.
Which I think was called Two Air Navigation School now, down at Thorny Island. And I passed that, and they came up for postings, and we were separated into groups, and it was decided I was to go to Bomber Command. Mm-hmm. And I went to Bomber Command, and I arrived at... I arrived on the squadron there in July 51.
51.
Yeah, July 1951. That's when I arrived back on my flying properly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so where were you based with Bomber Command?
We went to Scampton, I think we had to go, for the OCU, an Operational Conversion Unit, because we'd been flying Wellingtons at the Air Navigation School. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, with staff pilots and no crew, did various... I've done a very extensive... I mean, they assumed we were pretty capable because I went there on April the 2nd, and by April the 26th, I'd done all the flying. So, you know, I mean, they were night cross countries, mainly a lot of night flying because we're going on a couple of bombing runs. We obviously went on an operational, a barrage, which was, I can't remember what that was all about. But I was the first nav on it, so it must have been something that was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And then when I got onto the squadron, of course I crewed up with a crew.
Right, which and squadron
was this? No, sorry, when I got to the OCU, I crewed up with a crew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the crew was an all NCO crew. A sergeant pilot, first time he'd ever been a captain, first time he'd just come out of flying school. Myself, as a navigator plotter, a navigator radar, which was this other fellow I'd been knocking around with since I rejoined the Air Force, Scottish-Irishman, and a signaller, a young signaller, quite a young man, underage he was, because he ran into trouble both in the Air Force when they found out his real age, and of course he almost illegally married his wife by using his Air Force age as opposed to his proper age, which was my mother-in-law found out she went out the war.
So he was under 16 then?
Eh?
He was under 16?
I think he was under 16 when he was married, but he was about 17 years old when he came across us, yeah. And a gunner, wartime gunner, and that was our lot, and we picked up the other ones as we went along. Mm. And we did the OCU. Quite an extensive OCU it was, because, of course, the pilot had to convert on Lincolns, which was a big, big airplane from what he'd been trained on. And we left there and went on to a squadron. And we went on to a squadron in October 51.
Which squadron was that?
That was 49 Squadron. Yeah. At Upwood. One of the leading Lincoln squadrons.
What did you think was going to be the role of the RAF now?
Well, I thought that I thought there was a role for us, and I really thought we were going to go to war. I didn't relish the thought of going to war. I only hoped that the Russians would be as backward as we were in the research into aeroplanes. We did have a Canberra force at the time, and we had a pretty good fighter force, but our heavy bomber force were a bit limited with the Lincolns, which weren't much more than the Lancasters that we were fighting. They just carried a different bomb load. They were no more efficiently. We were still, our aids weren't all that good. We still did a lot of, still had to look out and find the enemy. Or there was a possibility, I suppose, if we'd gone to a wartime footing, we'd have got B-29s, because we did have Washingtons, which were in the country. And
so you saw Russia as the enemy?
Russia was the enemy, yeah. And we thought but we knew we would be helped by the Americans. And by now, of course, as time went on, and I got to know the Germans, although the Germans were supposed to be limited by fighting outside their own country, I knew that if a war started, that would be squashed straight away. And I think they would have been our allies. They'd have been our allies. And it was rather funny because I was meeting Americans now, both American NCOs and American officers that were, you know, with us. In fact, just after I got commissioned again the second time, I met I was sent somewhere and I was hosted by a German officer. And he asked me about myself and he said, have you been in Germany long? And I said, no, I'm not here. I'm in England. I just come over for this thing. And I've been to Gütersloh and I've been here and I've been there, you know, just for weekends. I said, have you ever been to England? He said, well, I went once. He said, well, you were bloody not very nice to me, so I never went again. And I thought afterwards, you know, one trip over England, and he belonged to one of these bomber squadrons. It was ran by somebody like the bloke that ran the fighter force, you know, where he said to Gorin, well, get me some Spitfires and I'll beat the buggers, sort of thing. And this one had said, well, you know, we're wasting our time bombing civilians, because he says that we can't do anything with them. They're too bloody minded or something like that. So Scotland was posted to the Russian front. And he crashed and got taken prisoner. But he was a nice man. Mm. And yet, I suppose, you know, if I told my mum he was one of the blokes that bombed her, she'd go up in the wars. I was friends with him.
The Berlin airlift was over.
No, I missed that, yes. I didn't go on that, yeah.
You went over to Germany then?
I only went over to Germany on what they call Lone Rangers or on various exercises. The Air Force had a great thing through the 50s and in the 60s was that I think they realised that the days of big bases being established, that you would have to go in and perhaps land on a little field and perhaps have to only use perhaps the local army or local civilians to service your aircraft. So we used to do what they call Lone Rangers, where you would go off and it was your duty to make sure that you refueled your aircraft properly. And there were certain checks that a pilot could do and there were certain checks that a navigator could do. This got later on when we were on Camberwells as a two-man crew, where you could go away for a week and your aircraft would only receive a daily service in.
So the strides you'd seen in the aircraft, I mean, they had changed.
They hadn't changed fast enough, because, as I say, the Lancaster I was flying was no different to the Lancaster I'd have been flying had I gone straight on to bombing in the 43, 44. The bombs were no different. They were still general-purpose bombs. There was no... there were big bombs around, but basically the basic fodder for the aircraft was 1,000-pound bombs, which were useless against an hardened shelter. So we weren't prepared for war, I don't think. We still had a good fighter force, and I think the... of course, I don't suppose the Air Ministry knew what they were doing, or couldn't know what they were doing. They never had the money. They didn't have the money that the Russians had, and they didn't have the money the Americans had. And they had to feel their way very carefully. And, of course, they did go for Polaris, which... but in the background, of course, there was the V-Force, which was coming along. Of Of course, the Canberra, as I mentioned, that's was the first jet bomber in the world, the Canberra. A very efficient aircraft.
You flew
on those. One of the only two aircraft we've ever sold to the Americans since the war.
Yeah, and you Canberra. Flew on the Canberra.
I did later on, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. But at that time, I mean, the main force was bomber, Lincolns, and... and a few squadrons of B-29s we had, the Washingtons. Mm. So we would have, I suppose some of us would have got through and we'd have dropped our bomb and perhaps done some good, I don't know. But I did think that a war was there.
Yeah, with the Russians.
But I didn't really go deep down into thinking that, whether I'd survive it or whether my family would survive it.
Yeah. Did you want to have a posting abroad somewhere? Did you want a posting abroad?
Yes, I would have enjoyed a posting abroad because I thought it would be good for my wife because she didn't like English winters to start with. And I thought it would be good for the children because I am not a... I believe that travel is a good educator. But unfortunately, I didn't... I only have one posting abroad.
So you were at Upwood with 49.
Yeah, I was at Upwood with 49, and there were only the command that I was in, the group I was in, did most of the airfield south of Lincoln. So we did Upwood, and then we, when they closed Upwood to refurbish it, we moved up to Waddington, and then from Waddington we moved to Wittering. Then we moved back to Upwood again. Mm. We started off in Scampton, then we went to Waddington, three group. Waddington, one group. Then we went to Kenya.
All right, yeah.
Well, that was interesting. That was very interesting.
Right.
Because I was an NCO still then, and we were chosen, 49 Squadron, to open the hostilities. And our crew, and all NCO crew, were chosen to drop the first bombs on the Momo.
Okay.
And I was always very proud of that.
Right, I'm going to stop you there. John Street, end of Reel 7.